You are listening to episode 160 of the Further Bros Tech Podcast, the oligarchy of the internet.
Welcome to episode 161 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is October the 26th, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my fall classic competing brother, James Furlough.
Yeah, I'm not on mute this time. It's good. I've been on mute like three times in a row, so now I'm like, what's that like? Yeah, how's it going, dude? Are you at, weren't you like in LA or Hollywood yesterday?
Yes, and today? Yes. Today. You're going to totally glance over the fact that the Giants are on their way to winning their third.
How did they? The update. The Giants, they won again.
Yeah, they did.
One more win, huh?
Two more, but yeah, it's pretty close.
Two more.
Yeah, they've only won twice.
This is a tough. I thought it was three times.
No, it's best of seven. So you got to win four times.
Yeah, but I thought this was their third win.
No.
Because I thought the series was 2-2.
It was 1-2, and now it's 2-2.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
You're positive.
I'm positive.
I'm fact checking right now.
Thank you. You're kind of freaking me out, I'm going to be honest.
Let's see here. That's the final score. Second inning. San Francisco lead series 3-2. Thank you.
What?
You're welcome. Last night they came back from a 3-run deficit to win the game to tie the series.
Did they already play today?
They just finished the game. That's why that's why you brought that up. Because I just got the alert like 2 seconds ago saying that they won. 5-0.
You know what it was? I was looking at the schedule this afternoon on Apple TV, and the Apple TV said that the game starts at 8, which it probably does because you're not doing it
Eastern
live.
Time.
You're probably doing it through MLB.com. Oh, I'm an idiot. I totally missed the game. Wow. Well, yay, we won. I'm a great fan. Jeez.
That Eastern time will kill you, man.
This is a lot. Yeah, you know what? That's exactly what it was. Oh, jeez. I feel like a terrible fan now. I feel awful. Like I just
one more win. Now do they hit? No, they got one more home game, right? Or do they head up back over there? I can't remember.
Ooh. No, it's they're on the way to back to Missouri or Kansas, depending on if you know your geography or not.
This is a tough series. The Royals are pretty good.
Yeah, they're not. They're not as bad as you'd hope they were.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they were undefeated in the playoffs this year.
I know. Well, I'm aware. Well, you know, it's funny. All of my friends and I were all like, "Oh yeah, but that league's the easier of the two leagues." I mean, like, come on, like anybody could go undefeated in that league. This piece of cake.
You know, I have come to learn, and it's especially true of football. It's like they're professionals. There's no such thing as an easy game or easy league. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all,
if you take it easy.
They're all so close together that it's, you know, they're that last 2 or 3%. You know, hopefully you actually find the better team over the course of a couple of games, but it's only by itsy bitsy bit.
Yeah. I finally bought and downloaded Moneyball. It was my birthday present to myself.
I did that today too.
I love that movie. It is.
I've not seen it yet.
It's a fantastic, fantastic movie. Which I didn't know this, but Aaron Sorkin.
Aaron.
He wrote it, directed it, produced it. You know, somehow involved in it. And turns out I'm not alone. But I love his movies.
I was gonna say. You're about to tell me that you like Aaron Sorkin movies, aren't you?
That's, well, I was like...
You are the champion of those sorts of profound declarations.
I know.
Really good movies.
I'm always late to the party. At least it's always like, okay, good. Because I was totally like, man, I like this guy. What else has he done? And no. That's not what it was. He was getting ready to do the Steve Jobs movie.
The biopic. And they made, yeah,
and they made some reference to the fact that he did Moneyball, and I went, wait a second, he did Moneyball? What else has this guy done? And then I was like, oh, did West Wing, which was fantastic.
Right.
It was how many? Oh, he did A Few Good Men. Which yep. You're like, what? That movie's iconic. He did. There was a Sports Center TV show that I absolutely loved. I was like, this thing's amazing because it was all about. Yeah, because the show started at the end of the broadcast and then did the next 23 hours to the next broadcast. And then so the show ended with them saying, and good evening, you know, and so it was all around the sportscast and not actually doing the sportscast, which is very, which is like exactly what West Wing is, if you think about it. And what happened was he actually started the sports show like a year or two before West Wing. And it turns out that West Wing was more popular. And so he stopped doing the sports one and focused on West Wing. And I was like, because I was all upset. I was like, why did they stop? This isn't done. And so I started looking it up online and went, oh, West Wing.
Makes sense.
Okay. All right. You're forgiven.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm missing some movies there too, but
You are. Don't forget about one of our dad's favorites movie, The American President.
Yes, that's right. That movie's great. I own that one too.
Yeah. And oh, by the way, The Social Network and Charlie Wilson's War, both Academy Award winners. You know,
I never saw Charlie Wilson's War. And Charlie Wilson's War. I did like the Facebook one, you know.
Yeah. Charlie Wilson's War is a great movie. I own that one.
You want to know who else I'm a fan of?
Yes, I do. Please tell me.
I am a fan.
Oh, baby.
Of the Tesla Museum. With the Tesla logo.
That's awesome.
So, like, what was it? Shirt smells weird. It smells like a new shirt. So it was like a month ago, the Oatmeal.
Yeah.
Was running a campaign. You know, he's kind of like spearheading getting the Tesla Museum up and running. And so he did a little thing where he was like, buy a shirt and we'll raise funds. So I bought a shirt. And he was able to get permission from Tesla to also put their logo on the t-shirt.
I totally so I bought to one. I really meant to do that. I actually was going to buy a brick. And
I was going to say, you could have bought a brick for a couple hundred bucks, and I was like, no, I'll do the t-shirt for 25 and say I was a part of history.
Yeah, I was going to do both, actually, and I totally forgot because I'm a big fan of the
True, we are. Well, snooze, you lose. So we both did something exciting and fun this weekend. I want to hear about your tough mutter before we actually head into the tech stuff.
So I got the snot beat out of me this weekend.
Yeah.
So for those of you who
don't know,
what's
your headband actually say, by the way?
What does it say? Mm-hmm. It says 3x tough mutter. So they started this new thing, what they call the Legionnaires, which are the for those of us that have done it more than once. You know, most people, you go in, you don't get it, you get your first headband. It's this bright orange headband. A lot of people were racking up the headbands. They had a lot of them, and so they started this new thing to sort of allow you to differentiate yourself as being cool, and you got to join the Legionnaires. So after your second year, you get a green headband, which they weren't doing that last year, so I didn't get one. Well, they gave me one this year. And then at the end of the event, I got my third one, which is the blue headband. Next year, I'll get my yellow headband, I believe it is. But yeah, you're starting to get the cool colors. And but it's
cool.
For those of you who don't know what the Tough Mudder is, it's a 10 to 12 mile, depending on which course you're on, 10 to 12 mile obstacle race. And there are, you know, crazy stuff like jumping into big things of water, getting electrocuted, sometimes getting, you know, ideally not getting burnt, but nearly getting burnt, climbing Berlin walls and climbing mountains and all sorts of fun stuff. And the first time I did it, I was, if you've been watching the show for a long time, you'll probably have noticed I've lost some weight over the course of this show. And
yeah, you weighed a little more that first time.
How much did I weigh?
No, I was saying you weighed a little more.
Oh, yeah, a little more. I weighed over 300 pounds, not much over, but over. and it nearly killed me. And then,
why Biggest Loser does not get in on the Tough Mudder thing.
I don't know why.
I feel like that's a match made to happen.
Really, it is. And then,
how far distance wise is it? Which I realize is not the point, but
it's about 10 to 12 miles. Well, it's
okay. That's
part
actually
of,
that's a distance. You know,
yeah, I mean it's a half marathon ish. You know, it's yeah, and the hardest part about it is that it's usually like they try to make sure you do at least 1,500 feet of elevation over the course of the of it. So it's not, you know, it's not nothing.
Yeah. Have you done it at the same place each year, or do you find new places to do them?
So the first two times I did it in Tahoe, which is really, really hard because it's their biggest elevation climb, and there's a lot of it's cold.
Yeah.
It's cold all year round. And then this year I was going to do it in Tahoe, but one of my really, really good friends from college decided to be an awful and terrible person and decided to get married the weekend of – that of the Tahoe event this year and wanted me to be there because he's a jerk, and so I had to reschedule, and I have a friend who invited me or who wanted to do it with me. There was an event down in Temecula, which is near Los Angeles, and he happens to live in Hollywood, so I flew down to Hollywood Friday night, and then we drove out to Temecula Friday or Saturday morning. We did the event for a couple hours and then came home. And but there was the big difference for us this year is it was just the two of us, and we're both pretty close on physical fitness, so we were really able to push ourselves.
Ooh, fun.
Yeah, so I hurt more than I've ever hurt. And I mean, like, I'm bloodied, and, like, I was, like Friday night, like, 9 o'clock at night, I was like, do you have any bandages? Because some of these wounds I thought would stop bleeding on their own, and they haven't. And so it's, like, it was an event, and we really pushed ourselves, but we really did way better than we actually had expected ourselves to do. There's a couple of events, like they have one where it's like monkey bars, but it's like an A-frame of monkey bars. So you have to climb up the monkey bars, which is really hard. And then the worst part about it is they do it all over a big old body of water. So if you fail, you get wet. So the big goal is always to get through
wet?
The... what?
Did you get wet?
Not this year. Boom.
And boom.
Yeah. Which was cool. It was really, it was great. It was really great. And it just was we got wet when we were supposed to and stayed dried when we were supposed to, which felt like an achievement.
That's cool. I am semi-interested in that.
Good. Because I actually am going to invite you to do it with me and him next year. And we were talking about being willing to fly up to your neck of the woods because they do them all over the place. To incentivize you to not say no. But you know what, James? You know what we're not here to talk about this week? Our 2015 schedules. What we are here to talk about this week, like every week, is technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations, dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they are developing. Now that we've wasted enough time on preliminaries, but before we get into the heart of the show, James has a short disclosure he has to throw away.
Yeah, so much for us saying we can't camp on a single topic.
I know, right?
We have so much to cover. And here it's even worse. I want to disclose that I actually had a late birthday present today.
Nice.
I got to fly a small airplane.
You got to fly in a small airplane, but you got to sit in the driver's seat and hold everybody's life in your hand.
Yes, I was the captain of the plane. Yeah, not really. But I did fly the plane. I got to start it and taxi it, and I got to hold on to the machinery. Well, the guy actually took us up. And then once we were up there, I got to turn it and learn how it worked. And then I got to hold on to it and feel as he ended up landing it. Because that's actually hard to do, it turns out. Well, not hard, but you know, it actually requires you to know something beyond what you learn from Microsoft Flight Simulator.
Okay, see, well, if Microsoft Flight Simulator 2003 taught me anything, it's really hard.
Yes,
it's incredibly difficult.
Yeah, but it was cool. It was one of those where you've played the Robert Kiyosaki Outside the Rat Race cash flow game.
I have.
Yeah, so it's this game, for those of you who have never played it, it's amazing. If you want to play it, come to Oregon, I'll play it with you. It's a game where you're in the rat race, and you collect paychecks, and the goal is to get out of the rat race by making smart investments, stuff like that. It's kind of the life I live but in board game condensed fashion. And eventually you get out of the rat race, and then they have like big expensive fun things that you can choose to do. And you put your cheese on the one that you want. I always strategically put my cheese in a place where it increases the chances of me winning, as opposed to that's the one I really want. But that's because it's because it's me.
You know, I was going to say, because in life, it's really great to sit down with your family members and compete directly with them and try to beat them as savagely as you can. It just is.
Well, you know. So anyways, all to say, one of the options is to pursue your private pilot's license, which I would only do after I retired. But it was you can go on like a discovery flight, which is what I did, which is essentially like this crash course in flying, where it's like, I'm going to show you everything you would essentially learn.
You know, a crash course in flying is really a bad metaphor in this particular case.
By the time I got done, I was A, pumped to do it, but B, overwhelmed. But here's fun little fact. If you want to learn to fly, it's going to cost you at least $1,200. No, $12,000.
I was going to say, that sounds reasonable compared to what we've been talking about.
No, 12,000. Earlier, but... And if you want to buy just a small little airplane so you can go up whenever you want it, it's only like 80 grand. It's still cheaper to buy an airplane than to move back down near you.
You know, but, touche.
Yeah, so disclosing that's what I did this weekend. It was a ton of fun. I also want to disclose that I work for Hewlett Packard Company. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions. I get to do that for about a year. It's going to be great.
Yeah, that's funny.
I switched to Incorporated HP Inc.
Nice. If you want to follow us throughout the week and see the cool comings and goings, pictures of Tough Mudders and airplane flights and the such, can't believe I missed that game. It's like, it's still, I'm having waves of realization. I'm like ashamed. This is awful. Anyways, you can follow me on Twitter, @MatthewDFurlow. You can follow me on Instagram, NextWeekin4. You can come and play Destiny with, no. Yes, Destiny with me on PlayStation 4 at NextWeekin4 as well.
I was talking with Jessie and she was talking about something and she, it was this, it's Sky Motion, which is a now casting app. We've talked about it on the show, but she was like, you know, like Skyrim. And I went, no, not Skyrim. She goes, oh yeah, that's a video game, huh? I was like, all right, you knew that was a video game. I'm happy to hear that. And you're frozen. Matthew. While we're waiting for him to figure out what's going on with his stuff, you can find me online at James Furlow, jamesfurlow.com, and essentially just James Furlow. You'll find me there. You're talking, but nothing's coming out.
Furlowbros.com is where you want to go for the entire show stuff. We got what?
What's go ahead. Going on I can here? Hear you.
Oh my gosh. My mic's on. Cancel. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you're good now.
James?
Yes.
I'm good?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay, hey. So anyways, if you want to get the weird, this show is really off to a great start. If you want to go see all this content from the show, we got a bunch of articles you're going to want to go check out at the end of the day. They're all going to be linked at our website, furlowbros.com. All sorts of different content is there. So go check it out, see what's going on, see what the happenings of the Furlow Bros universe are. And, it'll be good. I recommend it. So anyways, you want to get us going or is it my turn?
Yeah, I'll start it off. IO is a relatively new app. And it's described as feeling like a human friend that gives great restaurant recommendations. There's a cool video. We'll link to it, obviously. On TechCrunch, it was during their TechCrunch Disrupt in London. These guys gave a pretty cool presentation where they were talking about, if you're looking for a place to go eat, the current solutions like Yelp and Foursquare and Siri and whatever, they're just like, it's just not good. And so they've designed an app where it's very like, it's like you're text messaging with a friend. You'd be like, hey, I'm hungry. Where do you recommend I go? And it will, like a friend, text you back and saying, you know, oh, here's a great place. You should check it out. Here's the name of it. Here's the you know, the location, and you can click on it and go to it if you wanted to. Or you could be like, you know, what's the, you know, oh, and it'll tell you like kind of how expensive it is. And you might go, ah, oh, that's too expensive. Try again. And so then it will. It'll be like, oh, okay, here's one that's less expensive. Like, all right, sweet. Do you have a recommendation for like for what I should order? It'd be like, oh, get this steak awesomeness. It's good. And you might be like, do you have anything that's vegetarian? Like, oh, yeah, here's this rice side. I don't know. And so what'll happen is it's as if you were texting a friend that you're having this conversation back and forth, and it will learn, okay, this person doesn't want to eat at expensive places and they're a vegetarian. And so the next time you open up the app and like, hey, I want to go to a place with my boyfriend or girlfriend, you know, what do you recommend? It already knows, okay, let's stick away from the really expensive places. You know, let's make sure it has a vegetarian option.
Hey, I'm trying to impress her right now, okay? Normally, hey, we stay away from the expensive options. Hey. Tonight, we go a little crazy, you know?
You know, and you could say that, right? I'm looking for something a little nicer. And so so it can give you
but
those
not
options.
Too nice. Let's be real. I mean, it's first day.
So very cool service. And they were showing it live. And it was like, it was very, very cool.
I really like that idea. And it's funny because I was talking with a friend of mine, the guy that I did stuff with this weekend, and we were talking, he was mentioning that he thinks that, what's it called? What's that social network where you try to get, you know, connect with workers? I can't even remember the name now. That's how stupid the website is. It's like the big professional social network.
LinkedIn?
Yeah, thank you, LinkedIn. We're talking, he said like LinkedIn is, he made the comment. He thinks LinkedIn is like the MySpace of professional social networks. And I said, I completely agree. Somebody else is going to come along and do it better and just steamroll them. They're not going to stand a chance. And he asked, like, why do you feel that way? You know, he kind of was coming at it from an intuitive perspective. And he was asking,
this is very interesting because they make tons of money. So keep going.
And he said, why do you think that's going to go that way? And I said, well, I think it comes down to what people use it for, you know, because his problem is it's like he's a recruiter and hates it. Because it doesn't work. It's not useful for him. It's just so overwhelming and it doesn't actually do what he wants it to do. And I said, you know, you think about the, like most people you ask, how did you get your job? How many people get their job on cold calls? Very, very, very few people do. Most people get their jobs because they know somebody. You know, it's, I got recommended this position by X and Y, which is what those letters of recs are all about and trying to simulate it. But really and truly, how most people get hired is some dude goes, hey, I'm looking for somebody who can do this sort of a job to a friend of theirs who works, you know, in a similar industry. And they go, oh, I know a kid. And let me give you their contact information. And that's how I got my job. That's how most people get their job. And that's what we want LinkedIn to be, more of that casual friend who gives you a good recommendation because they have a sense of what you need and they have a sense of who these people are. And so it's sort of the dialogue of it understands you and it understands what it's trying to connect you with, and then it gives you a couple of good recommendations to send you in the right direction. And I bring all that up to say that's exactly how restaurants work too. You know, when you're trying to come up with a good restaurant, somebody goes, oh, you know, what are you in the mood for? I don't know, whatever. I'm up for something like, you know, let's sit down and have something nice, but let's not go too crazy. Okay, cool. Hey, there's this new restaurant nearby where I'm at. You know, and it's like, and sometimes just recommending a restaurant that you like, you know, even if, you know, not necessarily for restaurant discovery, just being able to bounce ideas. I have to eat something. I don't know what to eat. You know, we're all having a hard time figuring it out. That could be really useful, especially if it fits in like, you know.
Yeah, that's actually one of the features is you can start out with a group chat and, you know, have everyone you're going to go to dinner with and ask it, hey, where should we go? And if other people have been on it, actually knows their preferences as well and will help you find one that all of you will agree on.
Well, that's just a good idea. So,
they're starting out with restaurants because they're like, because it's, you know, we had to focus. And eventually they're going to go into like movies and music and entertainment and, you know, whatever. They're going to find other verticals to head down.
That's a good idea. It's a really good idea.
It is. I wonder... But that's, you know, you've, oh man, you said something tangentially that I am like glomming onto, which is like LinkedIn is the MySpace of professional networks. That's just like, there's a part of me that that feels true.
Right.
Because it feels so lacking.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know it.
Yeah.
But there is no alternative. So, well, what the heck, you know? And I mean, I know for myself, the only reason why I ever do an update is because I have automatic links to it. You know, like when I publish a blog post, I'm not going there sharing. I'm just whatever. And every once in a while, someone will like it. I'll be like, wow, that's weird. Actually, here was the crazy part. I did a blog post once and my boss liked it. And I went, ooh, actually that's kind of weird. He's reading what I'm writing. Okay.
No.
This is weird. And, but all that to say, like, that just, that feels real. That feels inherently true to me. I don't know if I can conjure up what's a better service, but
that's the point. I don't think there is one yet. I think it's ripe for disruption, though.
Well, I know, and that's, I'm trying to figure out, like, what would that be?
I was telling him, and I really do think what you want is you want a small number of potential recommendations. You want something and I said, I think part of it is that recruiters need to get better at, or, you know, employers need to get better at specifying what jobs they want. I think whatever platform wins, it has to get as good at figuring out what you want as it is at figuring out what other people are good at, what they can offer. And then their job is to connect a few people that fit within automatically, you know, fitting a few people that were within that confines and giving them to you. But the biggest problem that we all run into is that everybody's a liar when it comes to that. You know, a company wants somebody with 10 years of experience in seven different fields and was a, you know, major person, you know, like who's willing to work at the bottom of the totem pole for the, you know, the price of somebody who doesn't have a college degree. And the potential employees, the guys that are, you know, the applicants are lying, saying, oh yeah, I'm totally that. Like, I'm definitely 10 years of experience, willing to work, you know, on bottom of the totem pole for, you know, and it's just, you sit there and you go, and that's not true. When the reality of it is, when we all get into the job, you know, there's the employer and the employee have to find some sort of a balance, and it doesn't always work, and that's why you get fired early on, or you leave early on, because it's not a good match. But, you know, I don't know how you do that. It's a great question. But I know that MySpace, I know that LinkedIn isn't doing that, that's for sure. And I like the, keep it on a little bit on the rails here. I know that most food recommendations don't do that as well, and that is what I want. I want to be able to say, get creative, or kind of stick in the bell horn. I'm like, I'm hungry, but I don't know what for, so just, you know, guide me, you know. And if I can kind of in a very natural way guide it to what I'm in the mood for right now and have it give me a few options to pick from, you know, and it's one of those things where choice is an interesting thing. Choice makes us miserable, and limiting our choices actually tends to give us, you know, more satisfaction in when we finally make our choice. And so what generally we want is we want somebody to say, here are three restaurants to pick from, and pick one. And we're relatively happy if we get that much choice. But if you say, I can eat anywhere in San Jose, I can eat on any budget, and I can eat anything, you're going to have so many choices, you're going to be miserable. And so anything that sort of helps you, okay, what area are you interested in? What price are you interested in? What genre of food are you interested in? Are you looking for something new? Are you looking for something familiar? You know, and then give you three options based on a couple of criteria like that, that'd be perfect. And, you know,
side note, I feel like I told somebody this recently, and I don't think it was on a podcast, but we were talking about referrals and how those work. And, you know, if you just ask people for a referral, you know, say you're an insurance agent or whatever, and you ask people, you know, do you have three people who you could recommend I talk to? They will often not, they'll be like, no. and they're like, and it's not always, but sometimes it's not because they don't like you and they don't want to make a recommendation. Oftentimes it's because of that exact problem you just gave. There's so many options and choices out there that they get overwhelmed and go, no, I can't think of anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so they actually tell you when you're looking for referrals, and now you'll learn the pros from the novices. They say that help people narrow down their scope, and so they can actually focus on all the options and then choose one. So you might say, you know, hey, we're a referral business. Do you know someone I could talk to? Think about like your family members. Do you know anyone in your family who may benefit from this? What about your coworkers? Do you do an extracurricular activity? Oh, what about church or your softball team? And you literally, you jog their memory on people that they may know. And then all of a sudden they'll come up with a whole bunch of names and actually, you know, three that they think will be appropriate for you. But it's that same issue where it's like, it's overwhelming. And so we shut down.
Exactly.
But yeah, IO does a good job with that. I think you can download it. Well, you can, but it's not going to do any good because they're slowly rolling out to different cities. They just did Russia. That's where they're all from. And they're getting ready to head across the pond to New York and eventually other ones. So eventually, look at San Fran.
It's not so really across the pond. I mean, it's like...
it's a distance.
It is a distance. But you got to go across a continent one way or another. I mean,
yeah,
it's a big distance. Why them? Come on, New York's lame.
Well, you know. So yeah, IO.
You know, it's funny. I am so what's the word I'm looking for? Pampered when it comes to that. Like all the cool new like local services come to my area first. Like it's like it actually is like, what the heck? Why you know, like when all the new taxi services come out, they come out here first. When you know, all the That's new true. Like, you know, this thing, that thing, it's they come here first. Like, the only thing that we don't get first is Google Fiber and IO. Like, that's super lame. Like,
that's because you together. Have the most problems that people need to solve.
Well, it's worth it. So
speaking of having mini side note. I carved a pumpkin this weekend, and I ended up doing like a creepy Winnie the Pooh. He had like a skull face, and it was kind of fun. But I almost did this one because I saw this picture where it was Winnie the Pooh sitting down eating a bunch of honey with a bunch of bee stings all over his face, and so it was all like, you know, gross and big as a result of it. And then the caption was "totally worth it."
Yeah.
Like, yes. That's awesome. Anyways, go ahead.
So speaking of having a plethora of choices. One place you don't have many choices if you're working for the government and you're into security is that if you're trying to get what is a device that you can use securely, they have a program called the Commercial Solutions for Classified Program Component List. And it's basically devices that you can use because they're decidedly secure for classified stuff, and it's very hard to get on that approval list. But it's not impossible. The iPhone is one of the devices on that list.
Woo.
And up to this point, pretty much no Android phones have been on it. Android's considered too insecure to be able to be locked down. I think BlackBerry's. Oh, I know BlackBerry's on the list. So, you know.
That was at a
this
thing
point,
for a while.
Pretty much, pretty much at this point, your only choice is like the iPhone. So Android's been trying to get in it, and one Android company specifically wants those contracts because that's like... basically, that's what keeps BlackBerry alive is contracts like these at this point are
right.
The worst secure and governments are still willing to, you know, still only have us as a provider. So Samsung wants in on that because the rest of the world can go crazy, but if you're considered a secure phone, the government's going to stick with you. So Samsung, they have what they call their Knox security. It's a layer that they put on top of Android on their build of Android that locks down the their devices and makes them secure. And they've been really, really like pumping these things up for a long time as things that are, you know, are secure, and they've been trying to push them into businesses and stuff, and they've been trying to get into the government. And finally, earlier this week, Samsung's devices with Knox security got approved to be on the U.S. government's approval list for that stuff, which is pretty cool for Samsung. The implication is now they're like, they've got an anchor, so even if they're, you know, even if their, what's it called, their consumer stuff collapses, they're still got the government contracts, and that'll be really good for their phones. But wait, there's a catch. Because, like...
Is Android? Oh, wait.
They got they got approved, and, like, 3 days later, a security company came out and was like, you guys shouldn't do that. It's just... Oh, I love Samsung.
Just can't win.
They just can't win. And the security guys came out and said, no. Government, you don't want to do that, and we'll tell you why. It's because, as they describe it, a Samsung Knox security layer for Android generates weak encryption keys, stores passwords locally, and gives user login hints in a fatal, quote, security by obscurity design, quote, compromising the security of the product completely, a researcher said, or has detailed. They're basically like, at this point, it's not secure. It's not even pretend secure. It's as the researchers described, upon entering the PIN, the Knox app will show you a little password hint, the first and last character of your password, the original length of your password. This hangman game-style password security is not the the extent of the problem. It's pretty obvious that
that's awesome.
Samsung Knox is going to store your password somewhere on the device, the researchers noted, further detailing that in the folder data system container, there's a file called container password_1.key, which stores the user's encryption key. Oh, yeah. Samsung's Knox compromised completely. The research further examined Samsung Knox looking for, quote, how exactly the encryption of the password works and where the key encryption comes from. Samsung makes use of the DEX pre-optimization to strip out all class.dex files. I don't know what that means. The Java code is stored in a file called classes.dex, and the file is parsed by the Delvik JVM. So the reverse engineering is a bit harder, but they were able to get to them. And it can be completely decompiled anyways. It just is one of those, like, we can go through all the different ways to this can be exploited. But basically they said the most fortunate thing that's going on for people right now in the security industry is basically nobody's trying to use Knox at this point. Like, people use the iPhone. And so you are really protected by the fact that, like, you're very obscure. Nobody uses it, so nobody's going to try to use it. But it's not actually secure at all, which is just wonderful. That's just – nice job, Samsung. Really doing a great job there. No word on whether it's actually been pulled back off the list at this point, but I imagine it won't resonate long where it's at. I love Samsung.
I
would hate Samsung.
Samsung. I don't know what to say to that.
They just make it so easy. Come on, guys. Like, get your life together.
Get your life together. Oh, man.
So, speaking of secure things, have you gotten to take advantage of Apple Pay yet?
Yeah, I bought a shake and fries at McDonald's.
Mm-mm.
And then
that sounds really good. Might get that for dinner.
I attempted to use it at Home Depot, but they disabled their machines or something. I don't know.
Yeah, so they're not the only ones that have disabled their machines. Home Depot supposedly...
Well, theirs actually didn't work beforehand, because I used to try because I have the tap-to-pay thing on my card, and yeah. I've tried it like 10 times because I'm stubborn, and each time it denies my card, it's like, can't do it, and then I swipe it and it works.
So yeah,
the first time I got really, really, really nervous.
the deal with the, like, eventually Home Depot will get it, which will be nice of them.
Yeah, because apparently you're hackable. So come on,
yeah, right? Yeah, let's get a little security up.
Yes,
in this.
By the way, side note, because I know we're not going to talk about this. I just downloaded the Pebble app to control my Nest because I saw that article because it was right above the Samsung one. Now I can control my Nest with my Pebble. Awesome. Right. Anyways, keep going.
That is very cool. So, Rite Aid.
Are we going to get a smartwatch update for you, by the way? I'm just like.
What?
Are we going to get a smartwatch update from you this week or no? Or
what do you mean? I gave you the last one last week. I haven't owned it for a week.
Oh. What?
And it was awesome. I returned it.
Never mind.
When did I return it? Did I return it Wednesday?
It was this week. Yeah.
I didn't. It's only been Wednesday since I returned it all? Wow, this is the longest week of my entire life. That feels like a month ago. It's incredible. You know what? You're right. I didn't return it. Oh my gosh! Wow. It feels like a month. So yeah, I mean, like, just to do the brief thing of, I returned it on Wednesday, and I still check my wrist for the time, because it was awesome. I want one so bad. I can't stand it. Like, if Apple wasn't coming out with an Apple Watch really soon, I would buy an Android phone because it was that good. And wow. I'm like,
that's saying something. I mean, not to bag on Android, but to be like, wow, you didn't have it for very long and you found it that impactful.
Yeah, and everybody, especially the Moto 360, because it looks really nice. It looks like a watch. It doesn't look nice. Goofy. And, you know, I trust Johnny Ives. Wish they would have made a circular device, but and you don't always get what you want.
Just wait. They've been working on it for like 7 years, so they got a circular one in the system. Don't worry.
Yeah, I know. And yeah, they got a game plan. That's how they're going to get me to upgrade. I can already tell. And now with the circular screen, it's so beautiful. Other companies have come up with circular screens, but it just didn't work right. They were awful. They were the worst thing that's ever happened. And we didn't do it because we weren't sure how to do it yet. And now that we figured out how to do it right, and we're the only company that has, we've lost our circular screen. The new Apple 360. What the heck, guys? I know the game plan. I know how this works. You guys are jerks.
The watch wheel. You click it.
I'm going to say, it's one of those things where this isn't necessarily pertinent this week, but I am more convinced than ever that in 10 years, nobody's going to have phones. They're going to have watches. And that's it, period. You know, there will be, that's not entirely true. But I think we'll be fully into that transition, that most of your early adopters will not have phones anymore in their pockets. Because, like, it seems ridiculous to say that a watch is, like, really, like, it's too difficult to look at the time in my pocket. But it really is. Like, once you're used to having all of your pertinent information on your wrist when you need it, like, your pocket is really laborious, which is the exact reason why everybody went from pocket watches to wristwatches in the first place. Because there's a utility there that was very useful. And we'll all move back that way. I'm telling you. It's just a matter of time. Wristwatch time.
Haha, I got it.
But this is not what this conversation is about. What this conversation is about is Rite Aid and CVS. They actually have... What's interesting is they are not part of Apple Pay. They're not an official Apple Pay partner.
Yep.
They're not on the list anywhere, but they have the, you know, the NFC chip. And what was crazy is it worked with the iPhone, with Apple Pay. I guess it's not that crazy because technically they're not – Apple is leveraging – they're not trying to do anything new. They're leveraging existing
systems,
wallet system or systems out there, NFC systems out there. They're doing some cool things on the
– point of sale.
Yeah, thank you. They're doing some cool things on the back end for security's sake, but the actual transition of the information required to do the transaction and the tools that are used, those are all the same. And it allows them to do stuff like this, which actually was intended to make it easy for the stores, because then they can just, you know, they don't have to buy new hardware. It'll work with the existing stuff, and it did. And everybody was very excited about this, except for Rite Aid and CVS. Because in the last couple of days, both of those companies have turned off the ability to accept payments from Apple Pay. Now, they've also actually turned off the ability to receive payments from Google Wallet, but nobody is talking about that because nobody uses Google Wallet.
so it was funny, actually. So I went to McDonald's, and I was like, I just want fries and a shake so I can use Apple Pay. And so that's what I told them. And so I went there, and I did it, and it was like, this is so cool. And the guy was like, oh, yeah, I've been doing that for years with my Android phone. I'm like, yeah, I've heard. I know. And
yeah, I'm aware. Trust me.
Yes, it's okay. You don't have to be that guy. And I was almost going to be like, yeah, but is yours as secure as mine and as efficient and easy? I don't think so. And but I didn't. I was like, oh, that's so cool. He talked about how he went to Jamba Juice and used it all the time, and it was great. And I was like, oh, Jamba Juice. Yes, I need to go there. Not McDonald's. Didn't even think of that. And so, but, I mean, that's the point, right, is now all of a sudden I'm going to be like, all right, McDonald's, I want to go there. Jamba Juice, want to go there. Apparently Walgreens, I want to go there. And so it's like I will start this mental checklist of, oh, here's where I want to go shopping because I get to use this. And but, yeah, it was like you were saying, yeah, Android's had it for a long time, limited use, but whatever.
Yeah. Well, and what's cool about this is, and what's really good about this is that unlike what Steve Jobs would have done, Apple is really leveraging what is a primary technology. That's not true. Steve Jobs is pretty good about being very judicious about when to use an open standard and when not to. But, and this is very likely a case where he would have, and made it so that, you know, because it requires, for this to take off, it requires everybody to get on the bandwagon together. Like, everybody.
Oh, this is totally a whole fax machine network effect type of thing where the value of each additional device is exponential because it increases the value of all the other devices as well. And so.
Exactly.
And so when you have something like that, you have a huge, huge incentive. To make it as available to as many people as possible.
But if you have a competing product, by chance, that uses a different set of technologies and for a different purpose, then the last thing you want to do is to allow another device to be joined into it for that exact reason, because there's an exponential increase in usability. So this is why Rite Aid and CVS have turned off their Apple Pay functionality. And instead you get a little little note saying we're not doing this right now and tell them we're sorry, basically. Even though it was working because they've got the infrastructure built in. So big question is why'd you do that, Rite Aid and CVS? And the answer is currency. And no, I'm not talking about
what an awesome name.
I'm not talking about monetary policy. I'm talking about the technology called current with the letter C at the end. So you just say capital C. So it's currency. It's actually not a bad name, but it's a bad idea.
Well, it's not a bad idea. It's an idea that gives a ton of advantages to the retailers and does not help customers or banks or credit cards.
Exactly. But the whole point
is
a company called MCX, Merchant Consumer Exchange, spearheaded by Walmart, was starting to build a mobile payment solution that would become an app called Currency that's preparing to launch but is already in the App Store. Sorry, you can't use it. You need a special invite. And trust me, you don't have it. Unless you do have it, in which case, cool, good for you. Nobody cares. You probably live in Missouri.
It won't work until later next year, even if you had an invite.
If there's regions in Missouri where they're testing it out right now.
Okay. So that's I guess that's what I was saying. Cause I was like, for CVS and Rite Aid, their message was, we're not accepting this right now because we hate you, but wait until next year, because we're coming out with this new service.
Yes, exactly. So basically what it does is it uses QR codes that you can either scan with your phone or you can be scanned off your phone to do this secure change of information. You link your bank account directly to this app, so you're not going through any of the debit or credit cards. This is
such a classic. Yeah, and it uses ACH, which is interesting. And clearly there's some float going on there to make it all work
ACH?
Out. Yeah, the automatic checking thing. I can't remember. I don't remember exactly what it stands for, but it's that idea when you do a transfer from like your checking account to something else and you're not using your credit card or debit card. Oftentimes when you're getting your paycheck direct deposited into your account, that's using an ACH transfer. That's the name of it. It's pretty standard. If you're paying your utility bills online, that's usually what they'll use. In any company, they're like, send us a voided check and number, you know, or we want your bank account number and your routing code number. It's using ACH.
Yeah. All right. Very cool.
Anyways, yeah. What's interesting about it is this is clearly a solution designed by people who don't have access to the hardware. And, you know, and so they're making it work. And they're like, oh, we're going to use these QR codes. And you're like, you do realize that QR codes never took off, right? And that, like, they're not really a thing. I mean, they're fun little side things, which essentially that's what you relegated yourself to. And I just wonder, like, man, it would be so much fun to be a fly on that wall, because they've got to just be going, and we're done.
Well, yeah, and the worst part about it is the whole purpose of it. I mean, like, and Walmart is quite open about the fact that what happens is that they're getting charged 2-3% fees for every credit card exchange, and they hate that. They want to get rid of that because that goes directly to their bottom line and allows them to decrease prices that much more if they want to and be that much more competitive. So anything they can do to get rid of those fees, that's their goal. That's like
they got to use the Winco model,
which is
don't accept credit cards, don't have to pay the fees.
Right, well.
Call it good.
Yeah. I that's not what Walmart wants. They want to come up with something else. And
I know.
And the problem is, the bigger dilemma here is that, you know, they're trying to come up with this solution. It uses QR codes. It's not awful. I mean, it's actually a decent system for coming up with it. But the biggest problem is it's not a universal app. Now, what they're trying to do is get enough companies on board, like Kmart and Kohl's and Michaels and Myers and Lowe's and Longhorn Steakhouse and Old Navy and Racetrack and Shell and Wawa and Walmart and Wendy's and Yard House and 76 and 7-Eleven and Bed Bath & Beyond and K and Conoco and CVS Pharmacy. And the list goes on and on and on. But the point is, if you get enough of them, then there is one universal app that everybody can kind of jump onto, you know, a la the fax network effect.
Compelling idea is that you can have loyalty numbers tied to those accounts so you don't have to bust out both. That is nice.
I have a question. Do you use loyalty cards?
Depends on the company.
I have like loyalty cards.
Yeah.
I have loyalty cards for quite a few companies. I don't have any loyalty cards on me, though, ever.
Because my favorite is Fred Meyer, who has a loyalty program, but you get the discounts no matter what.
Yeah, I know. That's Fred Meyer. It took me a while to realize that. But once you realize it, you're like, what are we? These aren't discounts. Why'd you even put the real price on it? Everybody gets the discount price.
As a data scientist, I'm just like, you guys are idiots. Safeway's figured it out. Just
well, it doesn't matter. They've already connected your debit card to your phone account, and they know it. And a lot of companies talk about that. They get these big profiles, and if you walk in and pay cash at a company that if it's a company worth its salt that you shop at regularly, you can come in and pay with cash, and they're pretty sure it's you. Like, it's crazy how good they are at profiling people. But I guess the bigger point is that what this is the point I was going to make is I use loyalty cards all the time by putting in my phone number. I never carry a card with me. Like I don't understand.
Well, they're just saying it skips that step thing of having to put in your phone number. That's all.
Yeah, which I think eventually
again, the ironic part is that they're making the case that it's reducing the transaction friction because you don't have to add your phone number. You just do it and it works. And it's like, yeah. And Apple Pay does that times 10 relative to yours. So
yeah, and the whole advantage of it, but you know, the whole advantage of it really isn't to, like you said, it gets rid of the credit card fees, and the retailers really are jumping on board with that. But now they're talking about basically what happened was they had to sign all these crazy contracts that said, you know, basically we're going to be exclusive with these payment systems for quite a few years. There's not an exact date on it, but that's kind of where everybody is right now. And that's why CVS and Rite Aid are where they're at. They legally can't use Apple Pay because they've already signed contracts with this currency thing.
This is like Walgreens has just got to be licking their lips going, this is so awesome. We could not have planned this any better.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to skip Thrifty's ice cream from now on. I'm just saying.
You know, nice job, Rite Aid. Like, I can tell. I mean, it'd be interesting to see where this is like 2 years from now, but you already know where it's headed. This is done. And it's just going to get awkward fast for these companies. And because, again, it doesn't actually benefit customers. It doesn't benefit the banks. It doesn't benefit credit card companies. It literally only benefits these guys. And that's not win-win all the way around. That's just
the worst for them. The absolute worst for them is that it doesn't benefit Apple. And you're talking about, it's one thing to fight the credit card companies. It's one thing to fight, you know, the banks. It's one thing to fight consumers.
Well, and the worst,
toe-to-toe with the world's most profitable company, the world's biggest, you know, most valuable company, with the sort of money that they can throw around. I'm sorry, Walmart, but you know.
You're fighting Apple, sure, but you're also fighting Google Wallet. And so you're going against Apple, you're going against Android and all of their partners. Like, yeah, good luck. There.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just not going to work. So anyways, they're done.
Yep. So that was fun. So kind of fun to watch let's now that we've wasted half the show on all our preliminary articles, let's move along quickly. Oh my gosh. Too much happened this week. So I almost want to talk about this next article next week because it's worth talking about. It's an interesting idea. We're going to actually go over this pretty quickly. Basically what happens is, and this is what's important, I'm not going to bury the lead with much setup. We found that by 2009, half of all internet traffic originated from less than 150 large content and content distribution companies. By May of 2014, this number had dropped by a factor of 5. Today, just 30 companies, including Netflix and Google, contribute on average more than one half of all internet traffic in the United States during primetime hours. And this article basically said, couch potatoes have killed the internet dream. And they talk about the idea that the internet dream was, it was going to be this massively distributed, peer-to-peer sharing of content, and that it was going to be, you know, this anarchy state, and everybody was going to be running around. There weren't going to be giant corporate gatekeepers. And because we all want to watch the same TV shows, there is now. And the worst part is it's probably going to continue down that path. And it's not because these companies are necessarily great at swindling a bunch of people into doing something that they hate. It's that we're too lazy to do something else. which is an interesting argument. It's something to think about. And the reason why I want to bring it up is because I don't necessarily like where this article goes with it, basically saying, of course, the internet of our utopian dreams hasn't ceased to exist. It's just that it's becoming a minority sport. You can still create your own website or start a blog or become a global publisher and join the long tail of largely unnoticed content while stuff from Netflix et al. Swamps the net. You can still make lolcat videos and screen them via YouTube, Vine, or Vimeo, tweet your views or post your status updates to your heart's content, but you can only do so courtesy of the giant corporations that own and control the platforms on which the user-generated content appears and which, as Leibovitz's testimony shows, are reconfiguring the network for their purpose rather than ours. Sad, isn't it? We had our chance and we blew it. Which, I don't know. I guess I get their point, but it's something, it's a bigger trend, and I think, I guess the reason why I really wanted to talk about this is not necessarily to, you know, usually I like to come in here with a well-thought-out thesis of what this means and what are the implications and where are we going with it, and I think this is a big one. I think it's big enough where I don't really know what to make of it. I just know that that statistic is important. Intuitively, That the idea that most of the content is flowing out of a small number of companies, and as they point out, it's not that it's not that Google is generating content. It's the users of YouTube that are generating content, but it's Google that controls the gate, and that's important. You know, when you search for something, they tell you where to go. They write all the maps. They control all the content. They control the distribution. And more, because they're so big, they're taking over the fiber. I mean, they are going to be, you know, by and large, the connection from point A to point B, or them and a small number of companies that it's easy for them to get along with. And it's the reason why Comcast and Verizon and everybody are starting to do their anti-net neutrality stuff now. It's because there's such a small number of companies that they really have to focus on that they can focus on them and really leverage these crazy, you know, distribution network charges out of. And whereas before, when it really was much more peer-to-peer, you know, content, and there was stuff flying all over the place, and people weren't all bound around single sources, there was, you know, it was very hard for them to do that. Or at least everybody was being charged relatively the same, which is an interesting argument to make, and it's something that I think the big telecoms haven't really articulated. They just look evil and terrible. But it's a legitimate idea, you know. If everybody was sharing with everybody, then everybody was paying for their connection, and now Google's not really. And which I think I'm okay with. But at the same time, am I okay with that? I'm being charged for my internet connection. If I were, you know, I don't know. It's just complicated. It points out the fact that this whole internet thing is much more complicated than I think we're being led to understand. And on the other side of it, there's like the whole idea that when MASH did its like final episode of their series, like all of America sat down and watched together, and America doesn't do that anymore. The world doesn't do that anymore. And there's this question of these shared social experiences. And we talked about this last week with Netflix and the idea of screening movies with the Oculus Rift with your friends, you know, and the shared social experience of these different things. And there's something positive to a society that we're all watching the same shows, like as stupid as it sounds. It helps bind us and helps us, you know, see the world together and empathize with each other when we understand the same art. At the same time, there's definite consequences to that, you know, that we all shop at the same store and now there's no genuine diversity from city to city because there's always a Walmart, McDonald's, you know, Whole Foods and all the rest, and, you know, the corporatization of the world. And that has a downside too. So it's like, I don't know, I think it's just really complicated. And I think what's most important is something is happening, and it doesn't matter what you want at this point. It's happening. Now how do you deal with that? And what are the consequences of that? You know, and as big, you know, as we talk about, we want to watch the corporate opera. This is a huge trend that's occurring pretty silently underneath it all, you know, and really is driving a lot of what this show is about. A small handful of companies that are slowly consolidating, you know.
That's interesting. I didn't know that, obviously. I don't know how I feel about it either.
Yeah.
I think, like I, you said, too, I don't know if we have much of a choice. I mean, it's just kind of...
I think it's important to think about a lot as we move forward. It's something
I mean, it's the classic... You see this happen all the time in industries where you have consolidation. I mean, mm-hmm. it just kind of happens. I'm not shocked to see that happen on the internet, I guess.
Right.
Is it a bad thing? You know, it always kind of is. It means that the internet's maturing.
Mm-hmm. Which I think we all kind of expected it to. I think what's interesting is I don't think it's really set in. We still look at the internet as this big, dangerous place, but it's not. You know, it's funny. I was like, I was kind of doing show prep. I was pretty much through show prep, and I was on Reddit, and I got like 3 pages in, and we realized, like, okay, everything is boring here. And I closed it, and I sat there and thought to myself, what am I supposed to do now? Like, what's next on the internet? Which is dumb, but it's like, you know, I've got a couple of websites I go to. YouTube, Netflix, Reddit, Facebook, you know, Gmail. And, you know, they're right. Like, my general internet usage is that's sort of what it is. And Reddit is the gatekeeper for most, you know, for a tremendous amount of content. YouTube's the gatekeeper for video. Netflix is the gatekeeper for you know, major movies and productions, you know. Gmail is the gatekeeper for my personal communication. I don't know. It's interesting. It's an interesting dilemma. And it's not even a dilemma. Like you said, I don't even think it's worth asking the question if it's good or bad or complaining about it. I think it's just period. It's happening. It's important. If you want to understand what happens next and where we're going, you have to keep this in mind as sort of the backdrop to the whole thing, that we're consolidating more and more. And aggressively, quickly.
Yeah, it's funny. I was reading this. I don't know the right way to say it, but this guy about writing blog posts and, you know, doing an online blog-based business. Because I'm always interested in that kind of stuff because that's who I am. And he said a very interesting thing. He said, you know, 10 years ago, it was how fast can you write articles. And that was the secret to being popular, was if you could write at least 3 articles a day, you'd be pumping out enough content that you would surface up places and you could get big and have enough page views and life would be great. And he goes, that's not the case anymore. You're not going to out-content everybody. And like instead, slow down. Mm-hmm. Focus on writing one, maybe 2 really good articles a week and spend the rest of your time promoting it and getting it out there in front of people, because there's so much noise and information out there that you just can't contribute to it. You actually have to play the game differently than you used to. And the switch that mentality has really flipped in the last couple of years. And yeah, it's fascinating. A lot of the, you know, tech blogs, they still operate under the, we will do 10 to 30 posts a day.
Yeah. But they have, if you look at, like, you know, I think it's really interesting. You can always tell the articles ahead of time that are the big ones, the important ones, the ones that they're going to promote like crazy, because when you look at it, they've got 1 or 2 articles, you know, every other day that have a order of magnitude more views than any other, you know, article. They'll have 10,000 views on an article, and it's a long form essay on what's going on, a general trend. I mean, like, they're trying to do both. And it's funny. I mean, like, when you look at our show, I mean, we're definitely trendsetters and always have. It's not because we're lazy that we never did more than one episode a week, that's for sure.
Totally not it.
It's
I'm agreeing with you.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But you know, we talked about it. Like, what do we? What would we do? What would it require to make, you know, Furlough Bros Tech Podcast a major national piece of the conversation, right? And early on, the conversation centered around how do we generate more content. And we saw the trend where it was going. It didn't have anything to do with the fact that we were busy doing other things. And
I love
but you know,
this.
that's why
Right in history, right now.
We've always, but that's our thing. We've been trying to like do one great episode a week and make as many people notice it. And you know, but it's I don't know. I guess it's good to know that like we accidentally stumbled into what's going. It's the right direction. Okay, so now how do you promote? You know, promote it like crazy. I don't know. That's a little, you know, behind the curtain stuff, but.
Yeah, but again, it's the idea of there used to be a time where you could just create it and it would get out there, and that's not the case anymore.
Yeah, because there's gatekeepers.
Yeah.
Gotta get outside the noise, you know. And that's what Google can. That's what Netflix can do. It can get above the noise. That's
So
what the
gotta
advantage
get
of being a
on Netflix
gatekeeper.
somehow.
So.
That's an interesting concept. Could you get on Netflix somehow? Okay. That deserves more thought for sure. I agree, but it's good for now. Because you're spending all this time online, you may not want to have to go to an inconvenient place to flip on a light.
Like the bathroom.
Like the
Okay,
bathroom.
yes.
Yeah, or the other side of the room. Let's say, for example, you like to watch TV shows while going to bed, but you necessarily don't want to invest in the Hue either, so that you could turn off the light from anywhere. Okay?
Okay.
You're right. You have a concerned look on your face.
I plugged my phone in for like an hour and the battery's still dying. Which
Not good.
means it wasn't really plugged in, and I'm just concerned. That was all. Sorry.
Gotcha. So, anyways, this could be a real concern for people. Or let's say you're redoing your house, but only kind of. And you want to move the light as a result of it. But to do that, you got to run wires and get an electrician, and things get expensive fast. And again, you don't want to shell out a ton of money for like something like the Hue. Enter in
It's not that
Avion.
expensive.
What?
Said it's not that expensive.
Okay,
Or
that's
that's how
fine.
I justify it, at least.
Avion here. Is a company that is creating the Avion Switch. And essentially, what it is a wireless light switch that you can attach to the wall via a sticky thing anywhere. And it will connect to their other device. It might be an actual light bulb. So if you want to put it into an existing socket, or they have a little plug that you put into, say, like a power socket. And then, you plug your device, say like a lamp, into that, and so you can turn it off and on. It allows for dimming and whatever. And so, it's a device that is crazy simple to set up and install because you literally just stick it anywhere you want. It connects via Bluetooth, so it doesn't require power. Doesn't require to have the internet. This doesn't have a wireless network. That has to go through. I can connect directly to whatever that device is. And they're currently doing a Kickstarter campaign. No, it's not Kickstarter, it's something else. Where you can, they're trying to raise $80,000 for production, and it's only going to cost you $60.
That's not bad.
If you think about like your other option is to hire an electrician to come in and redo your light switch for you? Yeah, that's a good deal.
Yeah. I still have a huge echo, by the way.
Sorry, what?
I have a huge echo.
Oh, did you get it back?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me switch that off for you.
Appreciate it.
We made it most of the show.
You know,
Wow.
I know.
Most is lifted. No
I
problem.
figured that's what you had done, but I know.
No problem.
It
It's
comes.
solved. So, anyways, I thought that was a cool product worth sharing. Like I said, we'll have a link to it so you can check it out. They're Kickstarter videos. It's okay.
Those are always fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the idea of I think it's a this sort of stuff is like, it's awesome. It's gonna, you know, it's, you know, all of these different pieces of the puzzle are coming together, and you know, it's, it's just
so
cool.
So it's nice about it. You know, you could turn off your devices with your phone if you wanted to, but you don't have to. It's got a light switch, and they're just trying to make it easy to install. And if they could figure out a way to hook that up to like a fan, that would be pretty cool. Because fans are, those are a pain, apparently. Because I've been thinking about putting a couple of fans in our house, and I don't want to have the pull cords. I'm like, ugh, pull cords are dumb. And so I've been looking into it, and it's crazy complicated. You have to buy like this motor that has a an RC essentially thing in it, and then you buy a faceplate that you stick into it that's actually battery powered, so that you can control the fan via, you know, RF or Bluetooth or whatever it is.
No, that is a pain. That's awful. That's not No, that's not how you're gonna do it. That's not how you're gonna do it.
How am I gonna do it?
How are you gonna do it? It's there's a I own a one that's designed. It runs off of it. Basically, what you do is you plug it into your you. It's got like two sides to it. One plugs into the AC incoming. One plugs into where the AC would go into the to the fan, like, and then and off of the charge of the AC inside of it. It's got it powers the whole thing, so there's no batteries or anything. And then it actually has contactors inside of it that with an RF transmitter, you hit a button and it closes the contact, turns it on and off. So it's always powered off of line voltage. That's the ridiculous idea that you would have like an RC, like a servo motor to pull it for you. That's crazy.
No, not to pull it for me. The issue is that your normal light switch, if all you have is that, all it does is turn the fan off and on. It doesn't actually give you control over the light individually or the speed of the fan.
I know.
And so you have to have a separate, I don't know the right word for it. Apparently I'm using the wrong thing. But you have to install inside the fan a separate control center that will then talk to your...
Well,
yes. Tell it on and off. Not just on a manual thing. It's all, you know, digital or electrical.
Okay, good.
That gets the on and off. And that essentially you turn that permanent on, and then your light switch becomes permanent on. And your light switch then, and I'm supposed it could get the power from the wall. It doesn't have to be battery powered. And then your light switch then, you know, can tell it, okay, see the fan setting, set the light.
Oh, so the thing that has the battery is like, it's like a remote control that you like attach to the wall. Is that what you're saying?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
At least for the fan that I was looking at, because I needed a low profile fan, it required batteries.
All right.
Okay. Anyways.
That's less ridiculous. Yeah. It made you, the way you described it was like, that's terrible.
No, not something that would pull the cord for you.
Yeah. I was like, I mean, that's kind of cool in like a cool
retro 80s tech way. But...
Right. Yeah. Retro futurism, as they describe it. But that's crazy. Yeah. An actual solution.
No. Not what I was saying.
Yeah. Good. Don't say that.
Another technology that apparently is not sent to take off is the iPad, because sales are flat and people are really concerned about it. And the updates that Apple did were not really that fantastic. And so Tim Cook came in for their quarterly earnings, where they did pretty well. Surprise, surprise. Mm-hmm. And essentially it was like, we're not going to worry about this. Okay, he's like, because you guys are looking at these things 90 days, quarter over quarter. He's like, no. It's like, if we look at the number of iPads we sold since we introduced them 4 years ago, we've sold 237 million of them. That's twice as many iPhones we sold over the first 4 years of the iPhone. I'm not upset about this.
Yeah.
And then he's like, and besides, it's not down, it's flat-ish, okay? So he's like, so you got that for you. And then he talks about like market saturation, and he's like, I still think that there's a lot of space to sell a whole lot more of them. Now, having said that, he said that the replacement cycle is longer than the iPhone, and we're, to be honest, we don't actually know how long that replacement cycle is, and so we're still trying to feel that out. Plus, there is some cannibalization where, you know, people are deciding between a Mac and an iPad, and as you saw, our Mac sales are up, and so lots of people are choosing Macs. There's also with the iPhone 6 Plus and the iPad Mini, there people are making choices there. It's like, and honestly, I'm okay as long as they're choosing between those. That's fine. And then he goes, and we are, you know, we're partnering with IBM because we realize that there's a lot of opportunity here in the business and enterprise space, and so we're going to go after it. There's also a lot of opportunity in the emerging markets, and so we're getting ready to go after that. It's like, so don't worry about the 90-day quarter-over-quarter numbers. iPad's doing just fine.
My gut is this. I like this is that maybe this is the appropriate time to sit, you know, to reemphasize this. I think the cell phone's going to go away. I think it's the worst possible compromise between two different form factors. We want mobility and we want usability. Usability comes with increases in size. Mobility comes with decreases in size, and the mobile phone is sort of a compromise between those two things to try to achieve usability along with mobility. And the smaller it is to be mobile, the less useful it is, and the larger it is to be useful, the less mobile it is. And what it ends up doing is you end up wanting to have an extra, you know, keep your phone in your pouch or not have it in your wallet and or not have it in your pocket. And, you know, China is, you know, to much acclaim, having they're resewing your pockets outside the Apple store so that you can fit them in your pant pocket. That's more just fodder for the tech blogs. That's not a real issue, really, except that it kind of is in that it's more to the point of it's too big for your pockets. It's too big to have this device just sitting on you all the time. What we want is something like an iPad Mini that you can hold in your hand easily and use one-handed, and or a lighter iPad, but something that's large and useful and light enough to carry for mobility, you know, for some mobility, but then you sit down on your desk when you're going and doing other stuff, and you got your notifications on your watch, and your basic, you know, up-to-date, you just kind of your persistence of information, that like that constant stream of data that we're high on all the time, like monkeys getting, you know, shots of cocaine that our phone gives us. You can get that through your watch, which is why I miss my watch. And I think you're really going to get to the point where in the near future, and Apple recognizes this, that, you know, that's going to be the transition, that we're going to have fewer and fewer phones. Phones are going to become bigger and bigger till they're just all iPads. And how soon that transition happens, I don't know. There is also the problem of I've had my iPad Mini for almost like over 2.5 years. I'm not intending on upgrading it at this point. You know, every time they come out with a new one, I'm kind of like, oh, it looks cool. I want a new one. It'll be great. But then I'm like, but I don't need a new one. I like the one I have. It works fine for what I do. And, you know, as somebody who's like obsessed about getting the next cool iPhone, the fact that I'm cool with, you know, I don't know. It's a weird train. I can understand why he's trying to tell everybody be cool. It's a longer game plan. You can't get focused on the near-term stuff. You can't lose sight of what the product's supposed to be because it's an important piece of the ecosystem over the course of a long time, and it's still making really good money, and they just don't really know what it is right now still. I mean, I think it's a testament to how many different versions of the different iPads they have that they really don't know what it is right now, and they're still trying to figure that out. And it's okay. You got to give them time, you know, especially with a product that's still making piles of money, you know. It's okay.
Yeah,
if they...
they're not in a bad space at all.
Yeah.
I agree.
So I got a question, James.
Okay.
I know you've always been Google cool. They like to give you early access. They gave you a Chromebook before anybody else had a Chromebook.
Yeah.
I think I got my Gmail invitation from you.
Probably.
There was another thing. Yeah, I think you got your Google Glass invite before I got mine.
My picture's on their wall.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, your picture is on the wall in the Googleplex. So how the question is, are you still Google cool? Because I'm not. I don't expect to get a random invitation to any cool new Google product because they hate me. I don't understand why, but they do. But you, it's different. So how Google cool are you? Am I going to be really upset right now, or am I going to feel a little bit glad because...
I am not Google cool right now.
Yes! I mean, it's not good for the show, but it does make me feel better.
Yeah, I don't have the new inbox invite. Bummer. I mean, I sent the email asking for one, so eventually I'll get one.
Yeah.
Right? You at least did that, right?
I didn't even bother because I figured I'll just be invited by you.
Wait until I get it.
Exactly.
That's true.
They're not going to let me in. Come on.
Yeah. No. So unfortunately, I cannot give you firsthand experience on Google's new inbox, but they are redoing the inbox apparently to make it more. I don't know how to describe it. It's like a. It's not really Google Now, but it kind of is.
The description that I read is the Gmail team is building a new inbox that isn't Gmail.
Yep. So it's like some of the examples they give. Is it does give you, you know, the title of the email, and then it might give you the first sentence or so of it. It will also group like emails together, like from friends or social network type stuff. If there's pictures, it will give you a preview of the pictures in your inbox. That's if it's cool. For travel, it will show you your travel, you know, very, like I said, Google Now-ish. For purchases, it'll show you your stuff that you've purchased in there. And so... So it's just a lot more information, if you will, in the actual inbox piece. And if you click on it, it's like a regular email from what I understand. So the idea is to help you triage your email a whole lot faster and to just to rethink. You know, the idea they said was, let's pretend that email didn't exist 30 years ago. How would we make it look while still having it work with something from 30 years ago?
Right.
And so... they landed on Google Inbox, so you can get an invite by sending an email to something. I think it's like inbox@gmail.com or something like that. I think that's all it is.
So the real question that I have is, how long do you think we'll be using it as a core cornerstone to our productivity suite before Google gets rid of it, much to our astonishment?
Yeah.
It sounds like one of those experiments, and that's honestly that's part of the reason why I'm not getting too crazy about it.
Dude, they've got like 30 people working on this experiment, which I guess for Google is not a huge number, but that sure feels like a large. No, that's more than 30 people in that picture.
It reminds me of Google Wave. Google Wave was a huge project for them, which had a tremendous amount of engineering go into it, and they killed the product right as we were getting used to it, and figuring out how to use it. And they took.
I remember they showed that off on Google I/O. They spent like an hour on it. It's the next great communication platform.
There was this principle that I learned in programming, which was whenever you build a class, write a small test class to test out all the different functionality to make sure it works the way that you expect it to. And then as you build up classes that are supposed to work, do that. You know, don't build a bunch of subclasses just expecting them all when you throw them into your main program that they'll all work. Test them out first. And that's what they do. They create these really cool API, these really cool functionality, and once they've got them working relatively bug-free, then they have to stress test them. And in order to stress test them, they throw them into a functional app. And then they basically beta test all those API. And, you know, in this one specific app, and that's what they're doing here, is it's obviously a component of Google Now that they're testing out specifically that integrates with your Gmail inbox. And they're putting it in a little sandbox. They're going to allow a bunch of people to try it out, see if it works or not, see what they like about it, comment on it. They're going to crank it down. And once people have figured out what they like or not, they're going to kill the product and then move all those API to Gmail, to Google Now, and they'll bring it in as part of the bigger, you know, experiment. And I, you know, it's just obviously where it's going. And so it's, you know, part of me is like, it's, I want to try it out because, you know, I'm a techno dork and I think it's fun. But at the same time, I'm definitely not going to, I'm going to try to not get used to it because I know it's not going to be around for too long, you know?
Yeah, my biggest problem too is, you know, to be honest about it, Apple's Mail app is not bad.
It's not.
It works really well. And I mean, am I have my email under control, so that helps.
That helps.
And so I can, you know, a lot of systems will work for me. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I'm like you, you know. I use
say,
Gmail. It'd be cool. I use it in my browser.
I say I like the Gmail app. I use the Gmail app all the time. I use the Gmail app for Gmail, and I use the Apple app for work. Mm. It's just and the biggest reason for it is because it kind of keeps them both, you know, just segregated in my mind. It allows me to kind of, you know, and I realize there's ways, easy ways to do that in both of those apps, and they really want me to. I don't care. It, you know, it makes me feel better. You know,
it's the argument for specialized apps right there.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, so, I don't know. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see. I'm looking forward to use it to see, okay, what are the cool features that they're testing out and how they're going to integrate it into the bigger picture later on.
Yeah.
But, so, I got a question. So, did you, speaking of cool new apps.
I did not.
One of the giant 30 companies that generate over half of the internet's content traffic. I didn't, but you can just download the app itself. It's called, what's it called? I didn't.
Rooms. Yeah, I got
it. Rooms by Facebook. And then, so I'll tell you what, this is going to be awesome right now.
You downloading it?
No, that's better than that.
Facebook Rooms.
Okay, James. What? No, you jerk. Stop it. Go, just stick. Yeah, I want, don't. Is it? Oh, that's funny. It's seeing my own post and then bringing me to it. I can't do it that way. I'm trying to make it so that people can join my room. I opened a room. Here's your first invite. To take a screenshot to see this room. So basically what happens is you would use your phone and you could if you got the Room app, and then you would hit this QR code, and anybody who's watching the YouTube video can do the same thing, and you can join this room. But the big deal with the Room app by Facebook is you don't log in.
Bam.
There's no login credentials, so it's completely private. You're able to use the app, and Facebook will know nothing about you, which is completely untrue, but at least it's designed to make you feel that way. it's the whole idea is it's kind of like, you know, a lot of these apps have been kind of taken off, like Secret and that's it. That's the only one I can think of.
Whisper,
there we go. And, you know, apps where they're anonymous apps. You just post your content to it, and then, you know, you're able to communicate with your friends anonymously, and whatever you say is not, you know, isn't attached to you, which is not true. But that's kind of the concept. That's what they want you to lull you into the belief of, is that you're able to share this content and in such a way, because there's a recognition of the fact that anonymity, you know, there was that Oscar Wilde quote about masks. It's Oscar Wilde quotes mask. There we go. Man is least himself when he talks in his own person. Give him a mask and he will tell you the truth. You know, is that sort of, you know, and that's the whole idea of the anonymity of the internet. You know, for better or worse, it's pretty true. People tend to, at the same time, people tend to be the most dishonest when they have the power of anonymity because, or at least they will speak dishonestly, but will show you who they are by what they say, you know, even if it's dishonest, because it's, you know, they're showing you what kind of person they are.
They wrote that article. And, you know, I thought it was good, and they waxed philosophically about this idea of, you know, back in the day they had chat rooms and, you know, you could share ideas and you'd have a username for each individual chat room and people didn't know who you were and, you know, all those benefits. And now, you do have identity. And so it, you do limit some of that freedom. And this is kind of doing the best of both worlds, which is nice. I mean, that the guy just, you know, goes on and on and on, and that's what we're trying to create. And, you know, you feel all warm and fuzzy inside. And then you wait a couple hours and you learn that there's another company out there called Room Inc. that debuted an app called Room a couple months ago. That is the exact same app. It's like, you look at it and go, wow, it even looks the same. And I love the CEO or CTO, I guess, and co-founder. He goes, we don't know what happened. Something was leaked from a VCs we were talking to that are very connected to Facebook. Or maybe it's from a high Facebook executive that we have on our Facebook friends list, or a friends of friends working at Facebook, or someone at Facebook that saw our app and thought it was cool enough to copy. He says, we're pretty sure that it's not a coincidence. We don't understand how Facebook, with all their lawyers, could have released an app with the same name and features. We won't let this happen, and we want to defend all entrepreneurs with great ideas and great visions. Which is like, yeah, bummer. I don't know if there's a whole lot you can do, because they've kind of done this before and have gotten away with it. But I was like, well, that actually, honestly, that's what stopped me from downloading it. Was reading that story and going, no, there wasn't the kind of thought and originality put into it that they're claiming. Because, I mean, wow, for two companies to have thought that, you know, kind of almost concurrently and come up with the exact same solution, man, I'm really struggling to believe that that's true.
You know, it's funny. I think I'm glad I brought up that Oscar Wilde quote a couple of minutes ago, because, I don't know, people are least themselves when you know them, because they're going to try to be something that they want you to be, that they think you want them to be. Give them a mask and they'll tell you the truth. And sometimes people are scumbags. And I have a feeling, my gut on that story, because I didn't read the second story, I didn't even catch that. But my gut would be that there's somebody who's in charge of one of these teams that is trying to be impressive, to work their way up in the world, and they're either on the team or they're a leader of the team, and they said, I've got this really great idea. It's cool. It's called, you know, and somebody just stole the idea just blatantly, and they managed to hide it from the lawyers and from the higher ups, and just figured by the time anybody would notice, it would be too late, and they just, you know, it's Facebook, we'll crush them, and they would look like a genius for coming up with this idea.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, and scumbags are scumbags. They can be very bright and not think it through all the way, you know, and the classic crooks are stupid. You know, I doubt that that's a, you know, obviously Facebook is notorious for, you know, less than perfect, you know,
original ideas.
Yeah, well, just morality. that was kind of what I was going for. But, you know, but at the same time, it's like,
this is one of the reasons why we love to hate Facebook.
Yeah, this is, but like they said, like Room said, like, why would you use the same name? Like, you have lawyers, like, at least steal over our features and call it anything else. Like, really? Like, what? Like, how did you, you know, and it's just, it's so blatant that it doesn't even make sense. But the bigger point here is, and this is the thing that I get that really bothers me, is people make a really big deal about this fact that you don't log in with your Facebook account. But that's not how tracking works on the internet. It's really useful when you log in with your Facebook account. But if you log into Facebook, they put cookies on your computer, and they track all of your data across everything else, and they characterize you personally. So if you're using somebody else's computer who's logged into Facebook and you're not, and they notice a major shift in what sort of internet tracking they're doing, is what's going on, they know that somebody else is using the computer. And if you're acting like you, they'll realize, hey, this is somebody else. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, I just sit there and I go, like, they know what you're, they know the part, they know the identification of your phone, because that sort of information gets swept up in those sorts of credentials when they're getting passed back and forth. They right. know it's your phone. You've got the app on it. They know it's you. You better believe that everything you say is being correlated to your account and studied for the purposes of selling ads to advertisers. There's nothing anonymous about it. It's just, or it's not, there's nothing anonymous to Facebook about it. Which is the whole point. They want you to be honest. They want you to tell the truth. They want you to show what kind of a person you are so that they can advertise to you better. That's the part of it that bothers me, is that it's they're doing what Snapchat did. They're, oh, it's an ephemeral, whatever. It's a short term. The pictures disappear. Temporary. Don't worry. The pictures will go away after 30 seconds. And like, no, yeah. they don't. Your pictures stay with Snapchat forever. They just, your friends don't have access to them. So you can yeah. still think, you can treat it as though your friends only have, for have it for 30 seconds, and that's worth something, but don't use it as though those pictures disappear, because you better believe they don't, you know? Which, by the way, I don't think I've gotten a Snapchat in like a week.
It's done, huh?
I mean, obviously it's not. Yik Yak is on the up and up, though, man. That is like when I was in at
Yik Yak.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It's so lame. I don't even know what that is.
I know. That's how my response was too. Like, everybody was Yik Yak, and I went to the it was the alumni weekend at my school, and all of the undergrads were Yik Yak. I was, what the heck is Yik Yak? And they're like, it's a local anonymous Twitter feed. What? That is brilliant. And they're like, yeah, it's like a 5-mile range. Everybody within a 5-mile range of this location are on this particular Twitter feed, and it's all anonymous. So they're all like gossiping about each other. And wow. But you know, yeah, it's
kind of thing that's lame where I live, but that's cool.
Well, if you're in college, it's awful if you get on the wrong side of it. Like, I actually think it's like a terrible, like, it allows the worst sort of people to, you know, exhort their awfulness on other people. If you're cool and you're one of the cool kids at school, like many of the undergrads in my fraternity are, heck yes, it makes you look really awesome, but it's really easy to abuse and be mean on it. And but, you know, if you're the creator of Yik Yak, heck yeah. But they were all Yik Yaking. They weren't Snapchatting each other stuff, which I thought was really telling. And, you know, is Yik Yak the
Dude,
next
Snapchat? I'm so excited for Snapchat to die.
I know.
I want Snapchat to die more than Facebook.
Oh my gosh. It was them passing up on the payday. They passed up on the Facebook payday, and that was like the, you know, it was the, oh man. You guys are so full of yourself, and you are such idiots. You won the poker bet. You managed to get the second offer when Facebook went in, okay, you called our bluff, you're right, we're willing to offer you 1,000 times, literally 1,000 times more than what we offered you. And they said, no. Okay, have fun with that. You know,
well, that's because Zuckerberg celebrated for having said no to other stuff, and you know, and now he looks like a genius because of that. The problem was everyone knew that Facebook should stay around.
Yeah.
And with Snapchat, we all know that they are not going anywhere.
Well, and amongst all the other various things that Zuckerberg is doing and all of his different, you know, running one of the world's biggest company and continuing to growing it and being rather successful on all these different ventures, he also managed to learn Mandarin in the last 3 years and is fluent enough to tell jokes in China. Like, the dude might actually be a genius. It's so people are, and when they do things, it's cool. You can't, like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, unlike the Snapchat guys who are
They're just... Those guys have hubris, which is, you know, not to say that he does, that Zuck doesn't, but I think he's more worthy of his prideful nature than the guys at Snapchat are.
Fair enough. Anyway. All right, so Facebook, they copied Room. They are, you know, whatever. I don't think it'll actually go anywhere, but I wish that Room went somewhere and then Facebook bought them, because that seems to be the only way it works, but we'll see.
Right.
Another company tried to make something new by copying everyone else, but not doing it as good. And now they are taking a $170 million write down as a result of that.
That's a rough one. That's a rough one.
Sorry, Amazon.
Sorry, Amazon.
Your Fire Phone did not catch on fire with the populace. They've got about $83 million worth of inventory, which I'm kind of like, and? But I work for a very large company.
I was kind of surprised that it was as big of a deal for them as it is, but it's their profitless nature that
So that was the issue, is they actually lost money and overall, and so you kind of got to explain what's going on when that happens. Fire Phone not selling so well.
Yeah, and terrible.
No one's surprised.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised. Well, I'm not that surprised that it's selling terribly. I just think it's a bummer because I think they actually had good ideas and there was some really useful things that they were doing. And I still stand by my statement of, I think it was like most first gen products, it was a bad first generation. And if they were to iterate on it quickly, they could have turned it into something that they still could turn it into something that was a real competitor, but they're not going to because it was such a dismal failure.
Well, and they even made it a point to say, you know, we try all sorts of stuff and some things don't work out.
Well, and it's funny. I mean, the Amazon Fire TV is selling great by all standards. And, you know, you sit there and you go, that's good to know that, you know, that the line of Fire products wasn't crushed this quarter. Just that one didn't do so well.
Yeah. If you're looking for a little bit of entertainment and perhaps the most epic safety plane video ever made, I highly recommend that you go to furtherbros.com and check out our podcast.
Right.
Because I have a horrible cough and I cannot get rid of it.
You can tell.
And I think I'm in trouble. But anyways, Air New Zealand has released a new Hobbit-themed video. Apparently they actually did a trilogy, and so this is the final of the three, which is, you're like, that's appropriate. And it's worth watching. So go find that link. It'll say Air New Zealand releases a new Hobbit-themed safety video featuring Sir Peter Jackson and Elijah Wood. It's pretty good.
Oh, wait until after the show to do that.
Yeah, it's highly recommended. Pretty hilarious.
I got a couple of articles that I'm going to sprint through.
Okay, I'm going to keep coughing. Go for it.
Yeah. So, number one, Microsoft has finally done it. I think we've already kind of talked about this one, but it's like fully official now. They're dropping Nokia from their hardware. They're putting the four little squares on there, the traditional window, and put Microsoft. And, yeah, so over, you know, Microsoft is officially replacing the Nokia Lumia brand. They're keeping the Lumia, but they're just getting rid of the Nokia.
Mm.
And it's likely that Microsoft will continue to exploit the no, Nokia is still a brand cachet in Europe and developing countries. And so they're going to keep a couple of the low-end phones around for those. So for low-end phones, they're going to keep it because in developing markets and parts of Europe, it's still a very powerful brand. But for their high-end smartphones, basically stuff running, you know, Windows Phone 8 and eventually 10, those will all be Microsoft branded devices.
All right.
Procter & Gamble is going to spin off Duracell. The company has announced that they are paring down the company from the full list of products to their 70 or 80 most promising ventures, which is kind of an astonishing statement on its own. You've got over 70 to 80 like ventures right now that you're doing. I mean, I realize P&G is a gigantic multinational corporation, but
that's what they do.
It's crazy how many different products they have, Duracell being just one of them. What's weird about this is to think that for Procter & Gamble, the world's most recognizable brand of battery isn't one of their top 100 most profitable ventures. And basically what they're coming out and saying is that we're not saying Duracell's not making good money, because it is. It just doesn't have huge hopes. They just don't have huge hopes for its potential growth. They're saying, we think, you know, batteries are sort of at the top of what they're going to do, and so we're going to spin it off into another company, and it'll continue making money as long as it wants.
It sounds like another tech company doing a similar thing with the inkjet business. We're not saying it's not profitable. We just don't see the growth.
Yeah, and it's, which is really interesting, because, I mean, like, you think about it, it's like, I buy, you know what I buy Duracell batteries for? And I still do buy Duracell batteries, and speaking of which, I have to buy some more. But you know what I buy them for, James? My Mac keyboard and trackpad.
I was about to say that.
It's freaking crazy that I got to buy, keep buying these stupid AA batteries for these stupid...
I got Energizer rechargeables.
I think that's what I got to do, because it's just, it's out of control how many batteries these things go through. But everything else has an integrated, dedicated, USB-powered lithium-ion battery that lasts way longer. Period. That's what everybody's doing, and that's where they're going. And I think they're recognizing that that's the trend, that the sort of universal battery pack is, it's, you know, it may come back around, but right now it's on the way out. And it'll be a while before it stops being super hip and popular. So, yeah, they're spinning it off. Procter & Gamble is a company I feel like we would be worth doing a show, you know, like giving a good segment to at some point, because they're a crazy company. Them and 3M.
General Electric's about... just as bad.
Oh, yeah. You know, I do. It's funny. I work. There's a GE place that we work at, we supply to.
Those conglomerates, man.
Oh yeah, and it's just like, yeah, GE. It's like we buy a bunch of stuff from GE. We sell a bunch of stuff to GE, and it's just like, and they're completely disjointed. Have nothing to do with each other. Yep. Like, I don't know. It's just, it's crazy because, yeah, like you said, it's a conglomerate.
What's
you
would one? Think it's like Askmo or. It was Marlboro, and then they renamed themselves to some random name, so yeah. We didn't associate them with Marlboro.
Right.
They're another one. I mean, they own, like,
Philip Kraft Morris.
And
Philip Morris Valley. Is the one that owns Kraft.
Is that it? Was that what it was? Yeah. Philip Morris? Yeah. Yeah, because they own Kraft and Ghirardelli and a whole bunch of other just, like, they loved all the comfort sin foods.
They know what they're doing.
Oh,
Philip
yeah.
Morris USA. Yeah, they've yeah, they got a tobacco. Yeah, you're right, Marlboro. That's them. So what's really interesting about this, and what was I gonna? Oh yeah, no. The GE, it's worse than GE. I remembered. It's we buy parts of our systems. We buy from GE. We sell systems to GE, and GE has a division that competes directly with us.
Sweet.
Think about that for a second. I mean, that's how big of a company they are. Like, they don't even buy from themselves sometimes. What?
Well, and they don't think of themselves as a single company either. They think of themselves as 70 to 80 companies.
Yeah, competitors. So, yeah, it's just interesting. And then this one is one of those ones that got a lot of attention. Everybody's, like, got really excited about the SIM card that...
No, I did.
It's got a lot of diversity. One SIM card for every carrier. Apple's new SIM cards. Very cool device. People were talking about it. Our mom was bringing it to our attention, which we're like, yeah, we talked about it last week. But we'll talk about it again. Thanks for bringing it to our attention, Mom. And but AT&T, in classic AT&T fashion, has decided that, no, if you register that SIM card with AT&T, they are somehow wiggling in, locking it down, and it will no longer work with any other carriers. Nice. So somehow a SIM card that you bought for yourself, you own, you bought it from Apple, AT&T was in no way involved, AT&T, if you use it with AT&T at all, they lock it down and will not allow you to use it with other carriers because, you know, they have no respect for anybody and what you own. So, yeah, right. Wonderful. Yeah, just nice.
Classic. I love your comment. Of course.
Yeah. And then, yeah, of course they did. Of course they did. And we know it's funny. When it was announced, I think everybody was surprised. And that AT&T was on board with this. And then this happened. You're like, oh, okay. Okay. John Lasseter, the CEO of CEO of T-Mobile. I love him.
Oh,
he's awesome.
Never mind. Someone different.
He He basically, like, when AT&T did this, he, like, almost immediately sent out a tweet saying, like, you know, Sprint and AT&T are going to lock down your SIM card. You know what that means? Only one company is going to be your company for you that actually gives you options. Timo. Which is funny, if there's only one company that won't lock down your SIM card, they don't have to lock down your SIM card in order for you to never leave T-Mobile. Like, you know, it's...
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's but I love it because it's my company. They're the horse I'm rooting on right now. So whatever. Yeah. And then finally, and this is just a kind of a crazy story because it's just kind of crazy. Amazon launched an app, their new Amazon like app, the big deal thing for Android, like a month ago, and there were all sorts of features that they were really pushing, like doing Fire TV if you were signed up with that whole thing that works with that, and all sorts of really cool features that came along with it. But there was one feature, Prime Instant Video is what it's called, not Fire TV. There's one feature in the app that they didn't mention, and it's just been kind of there, and no one's been really using it, but didn't mention the fact that you can now download and install Android apps directly from Amazon's main app. No install of a separate Amazon app store needed. Nice. So Amazon has had a separate app store for quite a while, but Amazon doesn't let it into the Google Play store. I can't figure out why. And so, like, in order to have it, you basically had to sideload it, which is kind of a complicated process, and then so nobody was doing it, but once you had it on your Android phone, you could download apps through the Amazon store. Well, Amazon just sort of decided to sneak it in there anyways, and so they built it into the app, like a couple of usable menus in, and you just buy apps like you were buying them through the Amazon app store on the Amazon app, and then it'll download it directly to your phone and you can use them.
Huh.
Awesome. And this is one of those ones that'll be interesting to see what happens, because it's been in the App Store for a while now. A lot of people have it downloaded, and Google was completely unaware of it. And it's like that's the sort of thing they don't want to have happen. So it'll be interesting to see if they like, because and at this point, I'm sure they can't just like kick the Amazon app out of their App Store. Like, you know, I think Apple has the balls to say,
yeah,
you know, we're pulling the Amazon app from the App Store and just let Amazon deal with it.
Well, could they do whatever Google did with the Windows phone, where, you know, like they tried to make YouTube, wasn't it? And they did it homegrown, and Google went, no, we're going to kill that API and not let it work.
Yeah.
So I could see them do something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just target that app specifically, and all of a sudden it shut it down. Yeah. That's probably what they'll do. But that'll be a fun one to watch over the next couple of weeks. Is you know, Amazon pulled a fast one on Google. Wait a second.
Nice.
But yeah, those are the kind of things I love. Wish there was more drama there, but it's just the start of it. So I didn't want to. I don't want to wipe the conversation until that actually there's some real drama there.
Yeah.
Then we'll make it a main feature. So that's it, though. That's all I got for this week.
I love it, man. That's good for this week.
I know.
There it is. Okay. Cool, dude. That was a ton of news.
Yeah.
There was a lot really that was. Happened. We didn't even get to the whole hoverboard thing, which I was interested in.
Probably should have covered that.
That's right. Apparently some guy built a legit hoverboard, huh?
Yeah, like an actual hoverboard. The best part about it is he wants to use it to hover houses in the case of an earthquake. And you know what's nuts? He can. Like, it totally works because it uses the same technology as maglev trains. And houses generally don't actually weigh as much as maglev trains. So it's not a ridiculous idea at all. It's legit. It's crazy. This guy is going to make a big difference, I think. It's awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Hoverboard. $10,000.
Yeah, it's a little on the side. I would say, you know, but it's the future. It's literally from Back to the Future. I mean, can you put a price on that?
No.
Evidently, you can actually.
No.
Though. $10,000 is the price.
It's because we haven't quite got far enough into the future yet where the price drops.
Exactly.
We're at the tip of the future. Yeah. All right. Cool. Awesome, dude. Good show. Fantastic. I loved it. Hopefully all of you guys listening also loved it. Let's see here. So thank you. Thank you all for joining us. I am James Furlow, my Muddy Giants fan, who apparently is not a fan enough to actually watch the game.
It has been bothering me all show long. I've kept wanting to bring it up, and just like, I won't. It's not worth it.
Well, you're welcome. I'll just get that last dagger in there.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. So that half fan is Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk next time. Oh, jeez. I can hear it. This is going to be silent on YouTube.
Bye.
The song was almost over. Bye.